Swim check 1, 2. Bike check 1, 2. Run check 1, 2. I think we're ready. Let's try this. Welcome to the Try Beginner's Luck Podcast, a podcast where we explore the sport of triathlon from a variety of perspectives to help beginner triathletes on their journey. I am your host, Mashonda Shines. All right. Welcome back. All right. Welcome back to another edition of Try Beginner's Luck. We made it through March. We marched with momentum with Women's History Month. And I get to end the month with a dynamic duo. Love a good dual action interview. But this time, I get to bring two sisters to the podcast. One of the sisters I have worked with and have gotten to know over the last couple of years because she is an announcer amongst other amazing things. But listen, I'm just going to read just a few of the accolades because their tri sheet is long. One was a 26-year professional triathlete who is now a coach, speaker, and event organizer. One is world champion age group triathlete and organizes multiple sports in Vermont. Four-time world champion in Vermont. One is a four-time world champion. One is a USA triathlete, Masters Triathlete of the Year. One is a 7-times ITU World Cup winner. One is a USAT All-American every year since. They've lost counting because they get it so often. Both are USAT Hall of Famers. Yes, two siblings in the Hall of Fame. Both are champions in their own right. Ladies and gentlemen, beginner triathletes and more, I get to welcome to the Try Beginner's Luck podcast, Donna and Karen Smyers. Welcome to the Try Beginner's Luck podcast, ladies. How y'all doing?
Great. How are you?
I am good.
Well, sorry. I have to unmute myself. Yes, we're doing great.
Yes.
Good to be here.
A joy. This is truly a joy. I've gotten to see Donna come across the finish line at Age Group Nationals, but never gotten to really meet like face to face in regular clothes. So it's an honor to meet you. And it's also good to see you, Karen. We get to share the microphone together at Age Group Nationals, which is always so fun because we get to play on each other and, like, you know, be silly. At least that's what I like to do.
Definitely making fun. Yep. It's always good to do that.
Make it fun for us.
You have a lot more enthusiasm. It's great. It comes naturally to you.
Well, I'm glad I get something naturally because you guys have the championship gene naturally. So, you know, we all win. It's all a winner's day. So, yeah, here we are. It is 2024. And who would have thought that there will be two high performing sisters here at this point and at this time? I think what's most curious to me is finding out your beginning story. Like, how did it start? Because what I know and can read about is that you had your highs, but you also had your lows, and then you had your highs again. But it's all about that first story and how did you get started? So who wants to start first? I think Karen, because you're probably the oldest in the sport, even though you're not the older sister. Right.
I did get a little head start on Donna in triathlon, but she definitely led the way in our family in terms of getting into sports. We have 7 kids in our family. So growing up, I was the 4th oldest. So the 3 older than me were doing swim team, and Donna started doing gymnastics, and they all joined the tennis league, and I just was following in their footsteps, to be honest, just, you know, wanted to tag along and do everything that they were doing. And so that kind of set the stage, and I ended up really enjoying swimming quite a bit, and that became my focus in college. But even then, I couldn't just choose one sport. And so when spring came around and the swimming was over, I decided to walk onto the track team, and that's how I got involved with running. And then it just so happens that my college roommate was all, she was a runner and also was lifeguarding. And so knew, you know, did some swimming, and she's the one that tried a triathlon first. And so she kind of gave me the idea way back in 1983, the summer we graduated, she did her first triathlon. And that's what kind of sparked my interest in it. And so the next year I did the same race that she did, the Bud Light Boston Triathlon. That was the big race that she had done. And that wasn't my first. My first one was an all women's event that the Harvard women's swim team put on in right in Boston. A little sprint triathlon with a pool swim. So that was my first one. And I should throw out that my bike got stolen the night before the race. So we had gone to the pre-race meeting and then stopped in Harvard Square to get a bite to eat. And I left my bike, the bike I bought with my paper route money, I left it lying against the window, thinking I could see it while we were eating. And I must have lost track of it for a second. And all of a sudden after dinner, I'm like, oh my God, my bike is gone. So I had to borrow that same roommate's bike because she wasn't doing it the next day. So I did it on a borrowed bike. And then it was a good excuse to get a new bike. So that was actually probably helped me in the long run.
I love it. So shout out to roommates who got you into the sport. And so Donna, tell us about your kind of introduction to sport, because you started after Karen, right?
Right. Well, as Karen said, like, I considered myself an athlete growing up, but the big difference between Karen and me is I am pre-Title IX and she is post-Title IX. Those 4 years make a really big difference. So in high school, it wasn't until my senior year that they had to start a girls' swim team, because, you know, the boys had one with Title IX, they had to let girls have one, and girls weren't even allowed to run. They finally, my senior year, because of Title IX, they let girls run on the boys track team or cross country team. But up until then, girls weren't even allowed to run. So I did not know that I was an endurance athlete at all. I like to do things, but I did gymnastics because that was what girls were allowed to do. And I really should have been an endurance athlete all along, because that's what I'm good at, but I didn't know that. So then when I was after college working up here in Vermont, and I was hearing about Karen and our two brothers doing triathlon down in Connecticut, and I'm like, I know how to swim. I know how to bike. I like to bike. I'd already biked across the country as a, you know, just a bike tour. And I used to run to lose weight. And so I thought, well, I could sign up for one. And the Burlington Triathlon was basically the only thing I saw. That's what was here. And it was almost an Olympic distance. And so I did minimal extra training. I mean, I mostly commuted on my bike and went swimming two or three times to make sure I still could swim. And hoped I could make it through the 6 mile run. And it was a weekend after Labor Day in Vermont, so the water was 56. This was before anybody had heard of wetsuits. They cut the swim in half I think they made it like a third of a mile. And it was very cold, very wavy. And I really thought I was going to stop by the first lifeguard, but we made a little turn and I kind of caught my breath and I ended up finishing it. But it was surprisingly hard, but I still liked it because I was able to do it. I finished totally middle of the pack.
Two different experiences. It's like, Karen, you started your career having to overcome.
Well, the equipment thing was always a little bit of a challenge with me. I did much better on the swimming, biking, and running than I ever did at staying on top of equipment needs and, you know, keeping up with advances and stuff. I always like sort of would have preferred if everybody just raced on the same bike and, you know, the same helmets and everything. Like I didn't enjoy that part of like having to, you know, oh my gosh, now there's these new, you know, aero helmets and I'd have to, you know, find one that I liked and that fit me well, or that, you know, new, you know, updates in terms of learning how, you know, new shifting procedures. Or I remember when the aero bars were first invented and a guy that was local had kind of come up with his own called Sark bars. And I used to see him every week on a weekly time trial that we did around Boston. And he was quite fast. And I remember him saying, "Hey, Karen, you know, you've got to try these. I just put them on my bike and I'm, you know, biking the time trial at 1 or 2 minutes faster, this 10-mile race." And I was like, "All right, if you'll do it for me." So he set me up with these things and I started using them. And I never would have like been the one to go out and say, "Oh, wait, there's these new things. I better put them on my bike." So I definitely benefited from, you know, other people sort of just forcing me to adopt the new technology. But I actually used just regular training wheels on my bike, not the kind that keep you from falling over, but, you know, not race wheels. I didn't need the training wheels quite, but biking was definitely my worst. So at times I thought I maybe should have those. But for the first 5 to 6 years that I did triathlon, I was racing professionally and I did not get race wheels on my bike because I was like, good enough to deserve those. Like, I'm not a very good biker. Like I would feel like an imposter to have all this fast equipment on my bike. But it turns out that part of the reason I wasn't very fast on my bike is because I did not have the fast equipment. So once I got an actual like disc wheel on my bike, I all of a sudden jumped up several places in terms of my ability on the bike. So lesson learned, but it's always been one of the biggest challenges for me.
Why don't you mention that? Because we kind of tell beginners just to, you can do it on whatever you have. And you've kind of proven that you can do it. And then once you realize after, you said 5 or 6 years, you got the, you know, the disc wheel and you noticed that, you know, the, what is it? The crid bars your friend had?
Aero bars, you know, yeah, like aero.
But,
you know,
but there was a brand you made, a brand name. What was the brand name?
Sark. Yeah, Sark. His last name was Sarkeesian, so he called them Sark bars. Yeah.
Sark bars. Jamie. You got your Sark bars, and you noticed, wow, I'm a lot faster. So equipment plays that much of a role in how much faster you could be once, hear me out, once you get to that phase, but it makes that much of a difference?
So I started just with hand-me-down bikes. Like I bought a used bike and I rode for a few years on it. And Karen kept saying, "Donna, my next hand-me-down," because she used to get new bikes from Trek, "is going to you. My next new bike is going to you." And finally she got me one after I'd been in triathlon for 4 or 5 years. And then she gave me another one and it was definitely faster. But then in around 2005, Karen stopped getting new bikes. And so I was on my on Karen's 2003 bike, which I'd gotten in 2005, in 2013. And the bike shop kept saying, "Donna, have you tried a modern triathlon bike?" And I'm like, this was 2005. We're in, you know, I mean, it's less than a decade old. It's fine. And they're like, "No, you have to try a modern triathlon bike." And I finally broke down and bought my first new bike ever, except for like my high school bikes. And that year I won nationals and worlds in my age group by less time than I gained on the bike from a new bike. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was enough to make the difference between second or third and first in 2 or 3 really big races.
At the same time, Donna, you set the Lake Placid women's record on the bike. As an amateur, she set the record for all the pros too. And it held for a good
5 years.
8 to 5, 10, 8 years. And that was, you know, I don't know. It was on a hand-me-down, right? Wasn't that on the
Y-foil? That was on the Trek Y-foil. That was an awesome bike for me.
Yeah.
It fit me perfect, and it was very stable and aerodynamic. It was so stable that going down that 5 mile hill in Lake Placid, I did not waver once. And so that was actually an excellent hand-me-down.
Thank you.
Wow. Thanks, so I guess we have our answer. It does make a difference, but it doesn't have to be the end all be all when you're getting started. So, wow, that's good to know, especially for like myself. So I'm taking that in.
Well, and beginners too, I tell them that you don't want to start with the best equipment because then you don't have an excuse. You know, in the beginning, you want to be on like a mountain bike so that when you don't bike that fast, you're like, well, of course I wasn't very fast. I was on a mountain bike. Whereas if you start with like the best equipment, then what's your excuse, you know, just that you haven't
trained. And as you plateau a little bit, sometimes it's really helpful to be able to buy a little speed because like, as I get older, you know, it's like, okay, my body's not going to get faster, but every once in a while I can make an improvement by buying something. So it's good to start with, I mean, but neither of us started with good bikes.
Yeah.
That's good to know, you know, make the actual engine run before you add components to the engine. And once you add components to the engine by upgrading it, then you'll start to hear the engine purr a little easier. Yeah.
It's always better to, if you can invest a little bit of time in terms of just, you know, improving your training, you're going to get a lot out of that in the beginning, but that you don't really need to invest the money right from the beginning.
Right.
Except when it comes to safety and things like that. I do remember when they first got clip-in pedals, and I felt like that was an improvement that was just so much safer when I was first riding with the toe clips, you know, that you had to, a toe cage, you had to actually use your hand to pull it down over your foot. And then you couldn't get your foot out unless you used your hand to release it. I mean, you could in an emergency maybe pull your foot out, but I used to put it really snug because I wanted to hold it in there. And if you came, all of a sudden you had to use both hands to brake when you're coming to a stop, you needed one hand to get down and get your foot out or you'd fall over. So the clipless pedals were huge, you know, advance in terms of safety and convenience. And so I would recommend something like that pretty early on. And if you're really committed to being on the bike a lot.
So my mind has just been blown. I have to admit, you know how you hear so this is what I feel like. I feel like I'm sitting, obviously I am sitting with triathlon royalty, and you've been around so long that you've really seen the sport evolve, not only just the sport evolve, but the technology evolve. Like I'm sitting here thinking about toe cages, like what's that? And that's kind of like the Gen Zers talking about some, what is clip?
A dial phone?
What's a dial phone? Right. So this is like, wow, my mind is blown listening because I couldn't imagine a life without clip pedals. And yet you're saying you didn't even have clip pedals starting out. It was toe cages and how uncomfortable it was. And you guys were able to make do.
You should have seen the saddles we had to sit on too. Oh my God. That has been technology that has saved my life, I think.
Thank goodness for Terry.
Yeah. The Terry butterfly made it so I could do an Ironman. If it weren't for that saddle, I would not have ever done an Ironman.
Wow. So, okay, let's just talk about that for a second. What have been some of the major, what have been some of the major evolutions you've witnessed that have made a huge impact in how you try and how people try today? Can we talk about that for a second?
My first thing is the wetsuit. I would not be doing triathlons today if it weren't for the wetsuit, because our lakes are never warm and I don't warm up easily. There were no wetsuits in triathlon at the beginning.
Okay.
I mean, and to have wetsuits so you can swim in colder water and not freeze is just like, for me, it's night and day.
And in the beginning, they probably did have, you know, there might've been some people that would just grab a surfer wetsuit or something and they would try, but it was very awkward to swim in because it wasn't meant for shoulder mobility and, you know, flotation the right way. So it didn't make you faster. It just got you through the swim. But then Quintana Roo realized like, oh, this, you know, people want to be able to swim in these things. And they started playing around with making wetsuits for triathletes. And when Scott Tinley started showing up at warm weather races, warm swim races with a wetsuit on, people are like, huh, I wonder why he keeps wearing that thing, even when the water is 80 degrees. And then people realized like, oh, he's figured out that they're faster to swim in if you have the right thing. So then it became this whole thing where they started making, you know, temperature regulations and things like that. But yeah, Quintana Roo was definitely on the cutting edge there of making a wetsuit that was meant for triathletes to swim in.
So we have the clip and the toe cage, that kind of transition. We have wetsuit. Well, no wetsuit to wetsuit. Wetsuit.
Oh, yeah.
And now you can add swim skin because that's a new latest invention. Right. We have aero bars. We have saddles.
Yeah,
nutrition.
Women specific saddles. Like in the beginning, you know, every bike came with a men's saddle. There was like nobody thought about the fact that women's anatomy is different than a male's. And so Terry was one of the first saddle makers that actually made saddles meant for women. And it was just life-saving. Yeah.
That and the bike laugh. Shorts.
Oh, and bike shorts. Yeah. Isn't that sad?
Men's
that,
bike shorts.
Right. Men's bike shorts. Isn't it sad that no one really thought about that back in the day? It's like, hey, you do have men and women. But again, that's the beauty of the evolution, I think, of sport and seeing how things have evolved and how things have changed, and yet some things remain the same. So to that point, what things have pretty much remained the same? I mean, yeah, Mashonda, swim, bike, run, that order. Okay. But outside of the swim, bike, run order, what has remained the same that hasn't really veered off much in the years that you've been in the sport?
I would say it's partly just the kind of camaraderie that you get when everyone comes together at a race, that it is one of the few races where, you know, you'll have the professionals on the same course as the women, the eight amateurs most of the time. I mean, there's a little more separation sometimes these days with the waves and sometimes on different days even, but generally you're doing the same venue and course as the professionals, and everybody has sort of a certain amount of just respect for everybody in the sport. And so I think that part of it hasn't changed, you know, that just sort of all feel a little bit of a connection to each other because of that. And yeah, I think there's still, you know, just the challenge of, you know, learning to transition from one sport to another. I think that, you know, science has evolved a little bit in terms of, you know, how to get better at every sport. And certainly people have gotten a little faster transitions. If you watch like the Olympians, how quick they can transition from one thing to another. But you know, you can't really do too many hacks. You just still have to figure out how to run out of that water, get up to your bike, change all your equipment, run your bike out of transition. So I don't know, there's a certain kind of, still the same sport, you know?
That's what I think is, I mean, it's still the same sport. It's just little tweaks, like, yeah, the style that people wear, or the, you know, the cap and goggles probably haven't changed too much since the beginning.
But now you have a little computer in the goggles.
Right. Yeah. You can listen to tunes now. You couldn't listen to tunes.
Or what, look at your pace per 100.
Your pace while you're swimming.
Yeah.
And running hadn't changed too much till we got these brand new shoes in the last 5 years that have made all the difference in race pace.
Put some springs on your feet.
Now, have you picked in that, Donna, have you gotten the new shoes with the carbon plates? Have you, you're into that?
No, let's see. It was, I guess about 2 or 3 years ago, I got my first pair, and they're not like top of the line. I use the Saucony Endorphin Pros because they fit my feet. You know, I haven't been able, I don't have great feet, so I have to really find a shoe that's gonna work for my feet and my knees and stuff. But it definitely took at least 10 seconds a mile off my time when I got them, and I was like, okay, I am not putting myself behind the eight ball in races when everybody else is using these. I talked with one guy the first year they were out, and he went down to Massachusetts from here and did a race, and he was hoping to win his age group, and he came back and he's like, I got shooed. And I'm like, what? And he's like, the first two people had those new shoes, so I went out and bought some. And I'm like, huh.
I got shooed. That's a new one. I got shooed. Okay. Donna, you were going to mention something about nutrition changing. What's the difference?
Oh, yeah, that's changed, I would say, the most. You know, back, I mean, goo didn't exist. And, you know, now there's infinite types of like nutrition. Even Power Bar wasn't started yet. That was like a big experiment in the late 80s, I think.
Yeah, really.
Power Bar was one of the first, and Gatorade, like, was what, but, you know, you watch those old Iron Man videos. I mean, people are drinking whatever they can find. They're eating sandwiches and Fig Newtons and, you know,
Snickers bars with me all the time and Iron Man.
Yeah. I mean, when they first came out with, I think they were called Lepin Packs, were the very first goo-like things. And somebody had gotten a hold of a few and gave them to me for an Iron Man distance I was doing in 1994. And it, like, if I'd had one more, I would have made it through that run so happy. I mean, I still got, I faded a little, but it was like, I would have broken a couple of barriers if I just had one more sugar packet. I might have broken 10 hours and I might have broken 3:30 on the marathon because I was right on course. And that, you know, but I used them up. I only had, I think I had two or three. And by the time I'll like do one every 20 to 30 minutes.
Wow. So,
you know, one of the other things that I just thought, I'm sorry to interrupt, is just how much more information is out there compared to when we were first starting. So, you know, we learned everything from just talking to each other at races. There was, you know, a triathlete magazine that would come out once a month. And, you know, that's how I'd find out what had happened in California in races the previous month. You know, there was just no other way to get information and finding out about races. You would just find some flyers lying around and like, oh, this looks like a fun race. And you have to mail in the application. And, you know, it was so much just, and I think that was a big part of the camaraderie, is that we all wanted to talk to each other because it was the way of sharing information. So you couldn't just go online and say, you know, my crotch is killing me on bike rides, what saddle should I get? It was, you know, or, you know, what do you do for nutrition during an Ironman? And I was stupid enough that in my first Ironman, and I had talked to people and I was still an idiot, but my first Ironman, I thought for some reason that my stomach would not be able to handle calories on the run, that my stomach was too finicky. So I was just going to have to make do with what I had on the bike. So I, you know, ate and drank some stuff on the bike and started the run and just was taking water for the first 8 miles. And I felt great for 8 miles. And then all of a sudden it was like, you know, a little wind up toy that just ran out of wind up. And I was like walking. I was like, wow, this Ironman thing is really hard. I was like, oh my God, I have so many more miles and I'm completely exhausted. And then I was like, well, I did hear people say, don't drink Coke until the final 10K. And I'm like, I think I'm a little bit out of options here. I'm trying the Coke now. And so I tried some Coke and it was like, waking me up. I was like, oh my God, I have energy again. But I only got enough in me to get through about a half a mile. And so then I, you know, the aid stations are every mile. So then I had to trudge through a half mile until I got to the next aid station and grabbed another cup of Coke. It took me like 3 or 4 aid stations to build up enough that I could run from aid station to aid station again.
I was in that race, and of course I was hours behind. Karen was going back when I was heading out, and I saw her. I'm like, "Oh, Karen." She's like, "Drink Coke. It's great." And I still remember that.
Yeah, there were a whole bunch of us that were all first timers, and we were all helping each other.
I love it. This just warms my heart. And what was the name of that race? Which Ironman was it?
That was Kona.
That was Hawaii. So back then you didn't have to qualify at an Ironman. You could do, we did shorter races to qualify. So our first Ironman was in Hawaii.
Right. We qualified at Bay State, which is about a third of an Ironman. It was like a mile swim, a 40 mile bike, and a 10 mile run, I think, or maybe even a little less than that.
Yeah, I think it was a 10 mile run, 40 mile bike. Yeah. And I qualified at, Mike Pig and I, when once Donna and my husband had qualified, and I was like, I want to do Hawaii. And Dave McGilvery was my agent. And I said, can you find out how I could qualify? And he talked to the Ironman CEO at the time. And he's like, well, let's see, Mike and Karen want to do Ironman. Let's see, let's put up a couple. What races you guys doing the rest of the summer? And Mike and I were both doing Chicago, the Olympic distance. And he's like, I'll put up a couple slots in Chicago for you. So he put up 2 slots. I didn't even win. McKeely Jones beat me. But she's like, I don't want the slot. You can have it, Karen. I was in second. So she gave me the slot, and Mike Pig won and got the slot. But it was so not
different.
Yeah, back then, they couldn't get enough pros in a way. I mean, it wasn't like it was, people fighting to beating the door down. It was kind of, all right, if you want to qualify, you can come.
Pretty so, funny. McKeely Jones back in the day gave away her slot to Kona to you. And then you and McKeely kind of went back and forth a couple of times as you guys grew in your professional career, correct?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
So go ahead.
No. I just wanted to ask, when did you go pro? Because I think I didn't ask that question earlier because we got caught up in talking about other things. So when did you actually qualify to go pro?
So I started racing in 1984, and I turned pro in 1985, but pro just meant that I entered the pro category. That I didn't really change my lifestyle at all. I still had a full-time job. So I worked for a computer consulting company in Boston up until 1989. So I would just train on, my lunch hour before or after work. Hardly ever before, mostly lunch hour and after work. And then in 89, my company kind of went on halftime for a summer because they were not doing well financially. And so I was able to use that extra time to get better on the bike finally. It was the one thing that was hard to fit in, when you're working full time. And I got a lot better that year. And then my company actually decided to go bankrupt. And so instead of looking for a new job, I became a professional full time. So that was kind of a nice way for it to work out for me, actually. So I don't know if I would have had the courage to ever quit my job back then.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was that long. I thought it was like a 3-year job.
No, all the way from 84 to 89. I actually had a real job. Didn't stick.
Okay. And so Donna, you got in at 85, and then just kept doing it and realized, okay, I'm in my 30s. Go ahead.
Well, I didn't actually really just keep doing it. There was one triathlon in Vermont. And so I did it in 85 and 86 and 88. And I did the Vermont City Marathon, which was a first time event in 89. So those were like my first four major new events that I did. It wasn't until 91 when I actually moved back in with my parents for the summer. And Karen said, you know, I'm doing a triathlon the weekend. And you get back, and Laura, who's our youngest sister, and Dad are doing it because it was put on by her sponsor. Do you want to get in? And so she signed me up for one. And then I said, that was fun. And she said, well, if you like that, there's a really great one next weekend. And it was a Danskin women's one the next weekend in New York. And I was home looking for work, living with my parents. And so that's when I started doing lots of triathlons.
That makes sense. It's probably like a lot of people, they, you know, you have that disposable income to register to be able to go. So that makes a lot of sense. So
it wasn't as expensive then.
Yeah. Talking like $35 entry fee, probably at the most. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if we can bring that back. What do you think?
I put on a triathlon. It's not a, it's a clinic, but it's three triathlons for $20.
Sign me up, Betty.
Talk about helping the, you know, people get into the sport. That's the kind of thing you need, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Man, you know, sprint triathlons now can be upward of $150, $195 for sprints, depending on the type of sprint it is. And so, yeah, we need to find out more about your race clinic. So your clinics are in Vermont, I presume?
Yeah, they're just Thursday night. They're really just mini triathlons, but they don't, to make it so that you can do all three for one USAT entry. And we put on a little bit of I'm supposed to do a little education each time, but each time we just do a short triathlon. It's a quarter mile swim, a 9 mile or almost a 10 mile bike, and a 2.5 mile run. And they just sign up once because it's considered one clinic. So there's one entry fee and one USAT, you know, I guess it's called bronze membership now. And, but the problem with it is it's limited to 45 people because I mean, it's small.
Half the population of Vermont.
I up until last year, it was up to 40 people and I had never sold out. And then last year, all of a sudden, we started selling out. And it's because all the other triathlons, except for Vermont Sun, have closed in triathlon. In Vermont, there's only one other place where you can do triathlons in Vermont. And that's at Vermont Sun a few weekends. And that's it.
It's too bad.
I can only imagine how people are gravitating towards that because it gives them an opportunity to practice. And so it's not right. Only, it's like, you can practice, you can learn, you can make mistakes, and you don't have to feel like, man, I just spent $120 and I made all these mistakes. But if you're paying $40 to practice, I think more people will do that. That's something that we should. Okay. That's an idea to figure out how to reproduce that.
You need a race director like Donna that's willing to do a lot of work and not make any money out of it. She's doing it out of the goodness of her heart, you know? So,
but it is considered, I mean, it's called the Elmore Practice Triathlon Series. It's considered practice. And, you know, people lean their bikes on the fence, just like in the old days. There's no, like, you know, fancy bike racks, no fancy electronic timing. And it's small enough. We don't need policemen, you know? And so, you know, I've been lucky, but I've done it. This is my 18th year doing it. And so many people have been brand new triathletes there. Some of them keep going and do other ones. And some of them just come back year after year and do this one because they don't want to spend more than $20 doing a triathlon.
I love that. I love that idea.
And kids are free.
I love that. And just thinking about like in big cities where you would have to have some type of regulation, you know, in terms of making the streets safe, thinking about parks, like having it in a park and closing it down for a couple of distances. So that's a good idea. It's a good idea. Back to the triathlon, because you guys have had such an extensive career. Wow. When did it start clicking in for you that you were like beyond competitive and started winning after winning? And yeah, so that's my first question, because you both have had very successful careers. And so when did it click for you?
I would say for me, I mean, I knew I was, you know, I had a little advantage because I had a swim run background. I was right out of college when I did my first little sprint one, and I did win that, but it was just a local race. And that, I think I did another Olympic distance shortly after, and I did not win that. And I was like, oh, this biking thing is a little bit harder when you have to go 25 miles and you're not a very good biker. So, that kind of, you know, piqued my interest. And so then, you know, I started working on it. I think my big breakthrough in terms of thinking, oh, wow, I can race against, you know, some of the top professionals was at that Bay State Triathlon that Donna and Michael qualified for Ironman. The first year I did that, it was, there was some good prizes, and they brought in, at the time, it was Colleen Cannon was one of the top pros, and Allison Rowe, who had won the Boston Marathon, was doing triathlon and she was racing. And there were a couple of other people, Beth Mitchell. So some pros that I'd heard of from like out West California and Colorado. And I ended up winning. And not only that, but I outran Allison Rowe on the run. Like, we were running side by side, and then I was able to pull ahead of her. And so that was kind of cool. And that's where, yeah, I really kind of got the idea that, wow, I could really pursue this.
Yeah. Now, what about you, Donna? Because you have won so many age group titles.
Yeah.
When did it click for you?
I really thought I was middle of the pack always to Karen, because I never had really excelled at swimming, or I told Karen I was never going to get under an 8-minute mile for running ever. And then a year later, I was running like sixes in a 5K, but I didn't know what training did because I'd never done it. And so I was in my mid-30s, and the first year I did those triathlons in 91 that Karen had signed me up for, and then I just kept doing them that year, I would come in like fifth, 30 to 34, you know, I would not be podium. And but it wasn't until I think I really got better on the bike when my car broke and I had to commute 18 and a half very hilly miles each way to UConn, where I was going to physical therapy school. And every morning I would be late and I would go as hard as I could to get to school on time. And then
I was biking to and from work.
And then I would just drag home, but I had to do like a couple hundred miles a week doing that. And I suddenly, my bike just got way better. It's just like, I needed the miles on the legs. And then I also, it took until like, I still didn't even think I was that great in 93 when I qualified for Ironman, but I knew I was getting better. But it wasn't until I started doing Ironman more that I realized the longer the race, the more likely I was to win my age group, because I've never had speed. And that's why gymnastics was a really bad sport for me, because you're supposed to have explosive power. And I don't have that. I listened to your last podcast and she said, I don't have a fast twitch muscle in my body. And I was like, oh yeah, that's me.
You're talking about Kebby.
So it wasn't until I started doing the long stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was Kebby. She was like, nah, I'm a diesel. She's like, I don't have a fast twitch muscle in my body. I love it.
I've said that so many times.
So what I find interesting is that, you know, we want to celebrate like the moments in when we've had the victories, and you guys have had a lot of victories, but have you had any not so great days out on the course, and how did you handle them?
Many. Where do I begin? I definitely have had, like, I've done a lot of the dumb mistakes. I remember back when my biking was not so good, I remember that I was so excited to get off the darn bike and start running that one time I ran out with no shoes on. I was like barefoot, like out of the transition area onto the road. I realized, oh my God, I forgot to put on my shoes. I ran back and got them on. That was one of my first year or two, I think. Another time, I did lose my bike entirely in transition. Like I was ready to just say, all right, I give up. Where is it? It was a duathlon, I think, in Boston. And so it was run, bike, run. I think it was, I think it was after the bike that I could not figure out where my running shoes were. And so I just kept running around with my bike trying to find, and maybe I'd like flipped them over when I took them off the first time or something, but for the life of me, I just had no idea where I was supposed to go and rack my bike and find my shoes. Trying to think what other, yeah, I've definitely had, you know, I've bonked where you're just like, I remember one Ironman I did that I always have trouble with my stomach. You know, it's always like, do I need more fuel or am I going to throw up? Like, which is it? I don't know. And so I'm always on the edge. And so I went by an aid station. And I was like, oh, I think if I take anything right now, I'm going to throw up. And so I kind of passed it by and didn't take anything. And I got about a third of the mile past it. And I realized like, oh no, like I am bonking so bad. It's 2/3 of a mile to the next aid station if I keep going straight, but it's only 1/3 if I go back. And so I was like paralyzed. I'm like, what should I do? Like, I really need it now. And so I sat there for a little bit and I'm like, all right, I can't go backwards, keep going forwards. But it was ugly. It was like a walk, walk run to get there finally. So yeah, I mean, I've had my my bad races for sure.
Now, what about you, Donna?
Well, you know, the stupid kind of things I've had a few of, like one of the things that like Karen doesn't understand how I've always wanted to push the button on my watch, you know, back, especially when they didn't do transition times and stuff, you know, you didn't have electronic time. I always wanted to push the button on my watch. Well, if you're running your bike in and you push the button on your watch, your bike wheel turns. And I just did like an endo running my bike in because I wanted to push the button on my just like right in the middle of transition. I turned my arm just like, you know, total craziness. I mean, I was fine, but it was very embarrassing. And I mean, I guess I've had a little bit. I might have a much harder stomach than Karen, so I've done a lot better with nutrition. But I think like swimming, I've had some of the worst swims where I've just like tried to keep going forward and there's a current and the buoy's right there. So I take two more strokes and then turn and I hit the buoy. So then I go and I take two or three more strokes because I gotta be past it now. And then I turn and I hit the buoy because I didn't realize how much the water was pushing me back. And so I just couldn't get past the buoy. And then finally I realized, oh, I have to get way past the buoy, then grab the buoy to get around it because I'm not going to get around this thing if I don't do that. But then one other really bad swim was when, I guess it was Eagle Man in Maryland. The night before the race, it was 76 degrees and wetsuit cutoff was 78. So I'm fine. And I was camping, I guess. And then I drove back to where the race was the next morning. I didn't own a skin suit, but I did not bring a tri-suit that you should swim in without a wetsuit on top of it. And overnight, the temperature, because of the way the currents are and stuff, the temperature had gone from 76 to 78.2. And we had to do a half Ironman swim, and I was not in the appropriate clothing for doing, and I did very badly. It was pretty frustrating because how does the water go up 2 degrees overnight?
That's nothing.
And Karen always says, be prepared.
Well, I never would have even imagined, but I was at a race on one of the great, I think it was Lake see, where's Stu's Triathlon in Michigan? Was that Lake
So
Michigan?
it'd be like Michigan.
I think so. So we did the swim the day before. It was like balmy, like 80 degrees, lovely, supposedly no wetsuits, but they had warned us the lake can turn over. Well, I never would have imagined the next day it was so cold that they had to shorten the swim. It was one of the coldest swims I've ever done. It was like 55. It had dropped 25 degrees in one night. It was crazy.
And
So,
some people hadn't brought their wetsuits.
yeah, yep. But they had warned you. They had said, don't take anything for granted till race morning.
So I
So,
think if we can learn anything here, it's just like be prepared. Even if you think you don't need it, keep it in the car, because you just never know what you might need. And learning your body, like Karen, you're saying that, it was either you're either going to throw up or you didn't eat enough. And then Donna, you're like, well, my stomach is a little bit made of steel. I can do whatever, but you just don't know. So you have to kind of come prepared. Now, have you all ever experienced a DNF?
yes, unfortunately. My first DNF was, gosh, I was 1999. So I'd been in the sport since 84, and never DNF'd. And I was quite proud of never DNFing. It was kind of a thing, if I'm at all capable, finish no matter what place you're in. And I just didn't want to go down that slippery slope of, oh, I'm not having a good day. I think I just won't finish today. 'Cause I thought that could be 9 out of 10 races. You never like you go through fear periods where you don't feel great. Anyway, so I was in a race where it was a draft legal race, right? When the first year that we were allowing drafting in races for pros, and a girl in front of me, we had both just stood to climb a hill, and I was drafting behind her, and her whole pedal fell out of her crank. So, her foot still clipped into the pedal, but the pedal had unscrewed. And so it happened so quickly that she pressed down, but her foot just went down. She fell, and I fell over top of her, and I broke my collarbone. And so that ended up being a DNF. And that was, I think Tyler Hamilton was doing the Tour de France that year with a broken collarbone. I was like, oh, maybe. And I was like, no. The bones were all like sticking all this way. There was absolutely no way.
And you're in Mexico.
Yes.
Wow. What about you, Donna?
I think my only DNF, the only one I really know of, was at the Bay State, the one, that we qualified at in 93. A couple years later, I was sick. I'd had a cold. And I was feeling better enough, like, okay, I can do this. So I did the swim and I did the bike and I started doing the run. And every time I ran, I would go into a coughing fit and I'd have to stop and walk. And it was a 2 5-mile loops. It was a 10-mile run, but it was 2 5-mile loops. And so every time I would run, I would break into coughing. So I'd walk some and then I'd try to run again and then I'd cough some. And by the end of 5 miles, I was like, I've done this race. I do not need to do this. And so I just stopped when I got around one loop. And I think it was probably the right thing to do for my health. But I don't think I've had to stop in any others. I don't recall. Once I did break a chain and I was coming out of transition when I broke the chain and I ran the bike over to where they'd had the bike support before the race. And they said, oh, sorry, we've closed up. And I'm like, no, man, I just broke the chain. And they actually patched it together for me. And it was a nationals, and I ended up doing, not well. I lost like 10 minutes, but still I was able to finish the race,
Finish the race.
albeit more slowly.
Now tell me about the first time you won a championship. Like, so for you, Karen, tell me about the first time you won, I would say, Ironman World Championship in Kona. And then for you,
So my
Donna.
first world championship was, so in 89 was when my company went on half time, and then I ended up going full time at the end of that summer. And I went to my first world championship that summer, and also had my disc wheel for the first time. So a lot of things came together all at once. And I finished fourth at that world championship. It was the very first one ever that they held in Avignon, France. And it was really exciting to be there. And I was thrilled with fourth place. I'm like, fourth place in the world? Oh my God. And I went to the award ceremony expecting like to, you know, get called up on the, on stage and everything. Cause usually if you've won prize money, they would call you up like the top 10 or something. And, they did it like the Olympics where they only called up the top three. And so I'm like all dressed up and ready to go up on stage and I didn't get called. I'm like, oh, fourth place stinks, you know? So that whole next year, my goal was to just get on the podium, you know, qualify for the US team, get on the podium so I could get called up to the awards. And I would never have thought of that if I hadn't finished fourth to think I might be top three. Mm-hmm. But the next year it was in Orlando, Florida. And just with the trying to get into third, I somehow or other found my way to the front and won the race, and was very unexpected. And that was very cool. So I was right in Disney World and I got to high five Mickey Mouse on the way into the Magic Kingdom.
Now, let me just ask you this. Was that race when you got fourth, was that like the catalyst for you that you started from there, just started to win, you know, multiple times?
It totally gave me confidence. It was one of the first times I'd ever like passed a bunch of people on the bike. Usually I would have a good swim and then I would one by one, people just go by me on the bike. I had a really tough year qualifying for the US team that year. There were three qualifying races. It took two men and two women from each race. And the first two qualifiers, my goal was, you know, get on the US team. And I finished like fourth or seventh, or I just had terrible the first two races. And on the third race, I was this close to quitting triathlon. Like I was getting passed on the bike again. And I was just like, I freaking hate biking. I hate triathlon. Like, I'm just going to be a runner. And I said this in the middle of the race. I said, this is ridiculous. I'm not putting myself through this anymore. And, but when I made that decision, I like just said, okay, good. Doesn't matter anymore. Just relax and finish the race. Cause you don't quit, you know, in the middle of anything. So I finally just relaxed and finished the bike, got off the bike, had stopped counting what place I was in because it didn't matter. I was quitting. And I just started running and I started to catch a couple people that weren't as far ahead as I thought. And then after like 3 or 4 miles of the 10K, all of a sudden I see a motorbike up ahead next to a person. I'm like, what's that motorbike doing in the middle of the road? And as I get closer, I'm like, oh God, they're with the leader. Like, I'm like, this race, and I went up and caught her and won. I'm like, I love triathlon. I love my bike. I'm on the US team. So it's amazing funny. How things can change. And I really do think I was putting so much pressure on myself that I was all tied up in knots. Every race, I wasn't racing well because I had this goal to achieve. And so I was so concentrating on where I wanted to finish that I forgot to just do what you need to get through the race properly, you know? So it was a good learning experience.
That is a huge learning experience, especially for anyone listening. It's like, relax and just do it. I told myself that this
ahead, like think of right now. Yeah.
Right now. Mm-hmm. That's a word for me. So thank you for helping me. Cause just today I was like, relax, like on my run, just stop running so tensely, just relax. And so just that's a message for me. So I received that wholly. Donna, tell us about your time that you won a championship for the first time.
You know, I don't think I'd won nationals at all. I think it was 97 at Ironman that I won something for the first time. I just turned 40. So I think that was what it took before I started winning, was I had to turn 40 and get a new age group. I'm pretty sure that's what really made the difference. And so 1997 was a really hard year at Ironman. It was one of those, you know, super, super windy years. And I don't think I had any particular expectations. I'd gotten third in 93 and 95 when I'd done it, but I did actually probably the biggest win I ever had was in 94 between my two Konas. I mostly just did what my housemates and friends were doing. I was living with a couple other triathletes and they signed up for Martha's Vineyard Ironman, which was not an Ironman brand, but it was the full Ironman distance. And we went there and we all trained together and we just had a lot of fun training. And I think we went through so much lemon lime Gatorade in that household that I've never been able to drink it again. But anyway, we went to Martha's Vineyard and I just had a good day all day. And my friend Kathy, who I was living with, was like, Donna, you're going to win this. Donna, you're going to win this. And I'm like, no, I'm not. You know, I'd never won anything. But I actually was first woman and did a 10:01 Ironman, which is by far my best. It was a lot, you know, it wasn't as hot as Kona. It wasn't as hilly as Lake Placid. But it was like my first real win. I mean, it's my only triathlon real full win, you know, as first woman. And but then the next year when I went to Kona, my time was quite a bit slower because it was a way harder day. But I won my age group at Kona for the first time that year. And so that was when I realized that I, you know, it wasn't just there was nobody there in Martha's Vineyard. I can do this in this age group. And that's it, really every time I get into a new age group is when I have a really good year, because 5 years later, you know, being on the cusp of Title IX, Karen's in my age group for, you know, a year every age group. You know, she's 4 years younger than me. And so we overlap. 1 year at Nationals, she got first and I got second in our age group when she went back to age group racing.
It's the only time I ever did it, actually. Now she would beat me, so I can't do it anymore. I was just going to mention, though, when she won Martha's Vineyard, they only held it 1 year. So she's the record holder and
holder, reigning champion.
Lifetime champ. Yeah.
Wow. I was going to ask, had you all ever raced together? And we found out our answer that you guys did race together. So you placed first, Karen, and Donna, you second. But now I want to know, what was your most memorable championship win?
I think it has to be an Ironman, just because you have so many hours to remember. So I'm sure Hawaii, you know, there's just, you know, it's just such a long period of time to be out there in a race. And so, and you just go through all these ups and downs. So for sure, 95, and it was kind of a, you know, memorable year because it was Paula's had announced that she was retiring from the sport, and I had finished second to her the previous year. And I was thinking, gosh, if I, you know, ever wanted to have a chance to actually beat her, it has to be this year because she's not doing it anymore. And she, you know, had won it 7 times before and was definitely the, you know, reigning queen. And so my whole race was kind of, you know, revolved around her, which is probably a mistake, but my whole goal was to stay with her on the bike. And in the beginning of the bike, we, after about 10 miles and got out on the Queen K, and it was super windy. And the minute we hit the headwind, just seemed like she just started to kind of cut through the wind like a hot knife through butter. And I was more like a, you know, stuck in piece of toast and peanut butter. I was just not going anywhere. And, so I got to sort of, you know, I was with her, and then I got to watch her just leave me in the dust. And I kept getting splits from people who thought they were being helpful, you know, oh, you know, she's only 30 seconds up the road. I'm like, I know, I can see her. I was with her a few miles ago. You know? And then the next one would be like, Karen, you're 3 minutes back, doing great. I'm like, no, I'm not. I just lost 2 more minutes, you know? So though every time I got a split, it was like a knife twist. And I was like, darn, I'm letting this race just, you know, take off on me. And I was just beating myself up. And I ended up getting off the bike, you know, 12 minutes behind her, which was not in my plan at all. But I just had to sort of turn around my, you know, mental state and have a good run. And, you know, things started to click on the run, thank God. And then she ended up having a heck of a time with her nutrition, where she had, you know, made some mistakes. So it was very, very dramatic that she was slowing down like crazy and ended up, you know, as I was closing, she finally ended up collapsing with about,
quarter mile, half a
mile to go, but I passed her first. So, but she was, you know, I didn't see till later the trouble she was having, but she was, you know, clearly out of it, but still making her way to the finish because she was still leading. And I think after I finally got by her is when she, like, her last thread of willpower to keep going was like, okay, good. Thank God I can sit down and rest. So it was a very dramatic race. And so I remember much about that race and how it unfolded and how much anything can change within a race as well.
And what I hear, at least for me, what pointed out is that your mental, you turned yourself around mentally. And long distance races and triathlon in general is really mental. And also to point out how important nutrition is. We've had a few newbies on the podcast who talked about how they didn't know much about nutrition. And so this is making me think about how important it is for us to get like somebody on to talk about nutrition and how to fuel your body, even if you're starting, because who's to say, you know, the difference a day can make just by what you are putting in yourself. So that's a good, just some good reminders. And you, Donna, tell us about your most memorable victory.
I probably the Martha's Vineyard one. It's okay. Funny, the Kona ones, I have trouble even remembering them very much. they're just, you know, they're just so long. And when I get done, like, people all talk about being elated at the finish and everything. And I'm always like, oh, thank God it's over. But the one day that I felt great all day, pretty much besides the Martha's Vineyard one, was the Ironman Lake Placid one that Karen talked about me setting the bike course record on. Mm-hmm. I had this bike ride that I was just having a great ride. And even they were covering it for ESPN or something. And Dave Scott was commentating and he was interviewing Karen while I was on the bike. He's like, you know, who's tearing it up out there? Is Karen's my sister? And, you know, I had there was a pro race there. Like, I can't remember who won that day, but I ended up fourth woman. It's the only race where I would have won money had I registered pro in my, you know, 30 years of triathlon. I never would have won money in a triathlon except for that race. And I just felt really good the whole day. To actually have the TV cameras come up on me because I was just tearing it up through the bike course was pretty unusual, because I don't usually get that kind of attention. So that was very memorable for me. There's a few other memorable things that were not because they went well.
I'm sure we all have that type of memory, but I love how you and your sister both can go back in that deposit and you remember the details. And Donna, you kind of answered this, that certain races you don't remember because they were just like, you were just happy to like be done with it. But I've been so enamored with hearing the stories, and especially like your first one, how you're able to recount that so well as if you were in it in this moment. And so that's been a joy to just kind of listen to from the both of you, is just hearing you recount these stories. I really could talk to y'all all day. Like, I want to pull out more. And I know, I feel like we just have to set it up for a part two. Because Donna, you're still racing. Karen, do you still race, Karen, or lightly?
I do things for fun now. I do adventure races occasionally. I have something going on with my heart that doesn't really allow me to race the way I used to. So, I have to find other ways. I can still train, and I just can't quite do it at the level I would like to race.
Got you. And so, but you coach, and don't you coach Donna?
You coach. Yep. And so, I'm very involved still in the sport.
I don't coach because I can't imagine being coached. I have never been able to conceive of having somebody tell me what to do. I've always just sort of gone with what other people do and what seems to work for me. But I have never had a coach or like when I coach somebody, it's, I give them sort of a overall, okay, you need to do about this much a week, and this is what your long run should be. And I give them a little written up plan for the next 3 months and say, hope it goes okay.
So Donna, have I never seen you in a Team Psycho kit?
Yeah, I have worn Team Psycho. They kicked me off of the team when I joined the Green Mountain Multisport.
I don't think we ever kicked you off.
No, they did. They said I wasn't allowed to be on two teams.
Oh.
If I was going to be on Team Psycho, I had to wear so from like 90, was it 95 or 94 or 5 that Doug and Kathy and I joined as the Kinetic contingent of Psycho. Yeah. And then it was around 99, maybe, that they formed the first, the Green Mountain Multisport up here. And I wanted to join it. And I had to pick which one I was going to be on. So I decided to do the local club. But I mean, it's not like we're coached or anything. Team Psycho isn't all coached by Karen. It's just some of them.
Yeah.
Okay. But that was a really good sister banter. Do you guys have a lot of moments like that? Because I feel like we've missed out on that.
We remember certain stories the same and certain ones different. It depends how many times they've been told. If they've been told a lot,
Fair. Well, what piece of advice would you give to a beginner? Considering all the years you've been in the sport, which will be a total of 40 in 39 years, that's almost 60, 70 years plus of wisdom. What would you say to up and coming triathletes?
I think my advice would be to try and find like a group that is kind of at the same stage you are in, or that, you know, has opportunities for you to get together to do some training and to just because the camaraderie and the social part of it is as much fun as the actual physical training and stuff. So when I first got in, you know, it was a way for me. I just moved to Boston and it was a way to get to know a whole huge crew of people that became, you know, some of my best friends. And so it's kind of a little bit of a lifestyle, you know, but if you incorporate it so that it's not like, oh, I can't go out with my friends, or I can't, you know, be with my family or whatever, because I have to go do this training. No, you know, have your family doing it with you, or get your, you know, meet some friends to go for a swim after work, or so just, you know, kind of find a way to make it a fun part of your life and not just drudgery and something that you're doing to be disciplined and, you know, to, you know, whip yourself into shape or whatever. So I think that's the way to sort of make it something that you enjoy and want to do for a long period of time. And then to not judge, compare and judge your, you know, do it based on where am I right now? And can I get a little bit better rather than like, you know, right away feeling intimidated because of all these people that are better than you or faster than you or whatever. So, yeah, it's a great sport for being able to get better. If you just put in a little bit of time, you know, you're going to see improvement. So view it that way.
Yeah. And my advice is, like, I see a lot of people who want to do triathlon and they think Ironman is triathlon. And, you know, Karen did triathlon for 10 years, almost 9 years before she tried an Ironman. And, you know, I'd done it for not quite that long, but almost, I mean, if you count my early ones. And doing a sprint triathlon, you are as much a triathlete as Usain Bolt's a runner. I mean, you know, you don't have to do a marathon to be a runner. You can be a 5K specialist. You can be. And so I think if people would just like sign up for something fun to start with, it, sign up for a sprint. You don't have to give up your whole life. You can see if you like it. You can make friends there and you can have the rest of your day with people and not feel like you've been run over by a truck. So just go do some fun ones, and you're every bit a triathlete doing a sprint race. I mean, last year my best race was which I'd never done before in my life, was the super sprint at Worlds. And I mean, I never would have thought a 30-minute triathlon could be that intense, but it was. And so, you know, you just find some fun short things that you just could do with people and know the people. And my one other advice is, so many people get so nervous. And I just keep saying, you know, like, who cares how well you do? Nobody but you cares how well you do. You're not going to be embarrassed. I mean, unless you're one of these, you know, Instagram stars who's putting everything on the web to show that you are going to do great. But like when I do a race, you know, maybe a few people know now, but for most people, it's like, who cares? It's not like your life, you know, Karen had to make some living there, but I've never, you know, if I win or lose, it's not like it makes any difference in my life. And so I just think people should just, like, you know, step back and say, it doesn't really matter. Just do it and have fun. Nobody cares.
Although I think there might be some people that are legit worried about drowning in the swim. You're allowed to be a little nervous about that.
Learn how to swim. That's the first. Actually, that's the
learn how to get into triathlon.
Learn how to swim. Yeah. That's the first advice. Anybody can bike. Anybody can walk. You got to know how to swim.
Absolutely.
And float or breaststroke or float. Yeah. Tread water, you know, have some survival skills in the water that, you know that even if you get tired, you're not going to go underwater. You can just hang out and catch your breath.
Absolutely. And that's right, Donna, you did. You are the world champion, W-O-R-L-D champion in the super sprint for the
65, 69
age group. Yes. Okay. With that said, thank you. This has been great. We need to get to rapid fire because I've talked too long. Speaking of nutrition, gel or real food on the course?
Real food. Real food.
Mm-hmm. Real food. Donna?
Food? Are you saying on the course? Yeah, I would prefer it, but I know sometimes you can't do it. Yeah.
Okay. On the course, actually, I untapped maple syrup is real food.
Yes.
That's purchased.
Thumbs up.
Okay. That's a good one. Favorite distance. You guys have done them all. So what is your favorite distance that you personally liked at whatever time you were racing to race?
Olympic.
It's funny. Sprint or Ironman?
Ooh, that's such a big difference.
Olympic is hard. It takes more out of me than anything.
Dream training partner, either alive or historical.
Well, I'd say it was ideal when Michael and I trained together, because then, yeah, we were always just doing stuff together. So it was nice when I had my husband training with me all the time.
Okay.
I guess I'm sort of that way. When Eric used to run with me, we used to just have long runs. But biking, I can't think of who I'd want to bike with.
Swim start, wave or mass start?
Wave.
Wave.
Okay. Morning or evening workouts?
Afternoon.
Yeah, I'm afternoon too. But if I had to choose between early morning and evening, I'll go with evening.
Evening, okay.
Me too.
Do you pee on the bike or get off and take a proper pee break?
There's money at stake, pee on the bike.
Right. I most of the time I pee on the bike, but I've gotten a little more conservative as I've aged.
Yes, to the conservative with the little shoulder lean. I am here for that. Well, thank you so much. I feel so honored to have been able to be here with the Smyre sisters, Karen and Donna, both champions in their own right. both Hall of Famers, the only sibling Hall of Famers in history, right here at the Try Beginner's Luck podcast. We are doing it. We have this saying, whenever you try Beginner's Luck, you always win. And I feel like I won by having you guys on today. So thank you so much for being here. We have this new segment called Ask a Coach. So if you have a question that you want to get answered because you want to kind of improve but don't have the funds, go visit us on YouTube. It's exclusively on YouTube. It's called Ask a Coach, where you can submit a question in and we will get your question answered. With that said, whenever you try Beginner's Luck, you always win. My name is Mashonda Shines and we are out. Peace. Bye, everybody.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you all.
Thank you for tuning in and listening to this episode. We need your help so we can continue to try at TBL. So for more information on where you can find and subscribe to this podcast, visit www.trybeginnersluck.com. And don't forget, whenever you try Beginner's Luck, you always win.